News gathering service.
Colon cancer is the number two killer of all cancers. It can affect anyone. But with early detection, the survival rate is estimated at 90%. The key? A simple test you do in your own home.
I'm Ann Murray, and I lost a very dear friend to colon cancer. He was 49, and had he been tested, he might still be with us. Talk to your doctor. Get your test. Not knowing is not the answer.
For more information or to donate, visit coloncancercanada.ca. Colon Cancer Canada. We're behind, you're behind.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today, I bought a sweater. Wait for that. Last winter, I was scrolling through my Facebook feed when a sponsored post caught my eye.
It is with mixed emotions that we share this news with you.
After many years of passion and dedication to Waverly, Toronto, we've made the difficult decision to close our doors.
As a small business, we've faced increasing challenges in a world where larger corporations continue to push entrepreneurs like us to the margins. Unfortunately, it has become financially unsustainable, and our boutique can no longer keep pace.
Looking at the photo of the Waverly Toronto storefront, I was hit with a mix of emotions. How many times had I passed that window? While walking down Bloor Street's fancy Mink Mile and gazing longingly inside at all of the fine men's sports coats and knit sweaters that they displayed there so regally. I felt sad that the place was closing before I ever felt flush enough to just stroll in and buy something beautiful for myself. But when I saw the words clearance sale at the bottom of the sponsored post, I felt something else. Opportunity. I clicked through to waverly-toronto.com, a website that I had never dared to visit before. I don't know, maybe for fear of sticker shock. And that was where I learned exactly why Waverly Toronto was closing its doors forever.
Since 1985, Waverly Toronto, founded by Walter and Beverly, has been a trusted name in timeless style and quality. Now, as we focus on family, we're saying goodbye.
To thank you, enjoy up to 80% off in our closing sale. Don't miss your last chance to shop incredible pieces at unbeatable prices. Shop now before it's all gone.
I wasn't sure that I fully believed them. I mean, was this really just about spending more time with family, or were they actually closing the shop for the reasons hinted at in their Facebook post? Big corporations pushing small shopkeepers out of the market. I know that the closure of a luxury clothing store is not like the saddest thing in the world, but like they said, Waverly Toronto was a labor of love. A family business, like an institution in the community, one that had been serving Toronto for 40 years. Their Facebook page, which had like thousands of likes on it, it was filled with posts from sad but grateful customers, wishing Walter and Beverly the very best, but bemoaning the fact that yet another local business had to close. Seems like it was sad for everybody to see Waverly Toronto go. But a little happy for me to have a chance to finally pick something out for myself. And maybe taking advantage of this final sale was not greedy or opportunistic of me, but generous of me. I mean, Walter and Beverly had inventory that they needed to clear out. They had a retirement future to pay for. Why not help them? I clicked through some products and stopped when I saw a handsome sweater from the brand Leo. It was listed as Men's Elegant Cardigan, and it was just $69.95, marked down from $280. I had never worn Leo before, and after entering my credit card details and hitting that purchase button, I was hit with a mild rush of consumer dopamine. A couple of weeks later, my garment arrived.
Your poor zipper, bro.
If you want to destroy my sweater, hold this thread as I walk away. Well, today I'm going to pull that thread myself. Wait for it. How do I look?
Man, it's painted on. It looks like the spandex things that, like, cyclists wear. The sleeves go just below your elbows. The pockets look fake, and it looks like they're actually doing a lot of work and sort of loosening up the way it fits.
I feel like I'm wearing Spanx.
Yeah, it's too tight, bro.
At first, I thought that they must have just sent me the wrong size, so I went to check the tag. But it was not where I thought it would be. It was on the outside of the sweater, stitched into my shoulder. Anyone checking out the big guy bursting out of his sausage casing sweater could easily see the size tag. It read XL, which usually fits me just fine. I did find another tag inside, mostly Chinese text, but there was some English. 100% polyester. I figured that the quickest way to deal with this would be to simply walk up to Bloor Street to Waverly Toronto's brick-and-mortar storefront, get an exchange or a refund. So I checked Google Maps for the exact address. And please, like, don't gloat if you know where this is going. You're better than that. You're better than my colleagues here, who made fun of me because they figured it out before I did. Because it came as a surprise to me, anyhow, to discover that Waverly Toronto does not have a storefront on Bloor Street's Mink Mile. And guess what? They do not have a storefront anywhere. There is no record of any physical Waverly Toronto existing in Toronto or anywhere. I started to feverishly check everything. How long had they had that Facebook page? When was the website registered? If this was a 40-year-old business, how come those things only happened in the last 2 years? I couldn't find any evidence of them in the Yellow Pages. There was no business registry for Waverly Toronto. Nobody I knew had ever shopped there. There was nothing I could find that indicated to me that a clothing store called Waverly Toronto had ever actually existed. I couldn't find anything, but I did find this.
We are quite confident that this image, or a significant part of it, was created by AI.
That's what I read on a website called Was It AI? It was. They analyzed the pictures that I sent and informed me that Beverly and Walter are not real human beings. I was beginning to suspect that I had been scammed. And as it turns out, other Torontonians felt that way too. These are reviews of Waverly Toronto from the consumer website Trustpilot.
The products that I ordered are pretty much garbage. Two pieces that I ordered didn't come close to fitting. Do not order from these scam artists.
This whole website is deceitful. This company is not in Toronto, but China. When I needed to return an item was when I discovered the deceit. I should have known better. Beware.
Facebook scam. I looked closely at the picture on the main screen, and the company name on the storefront looks photoshopped. My bad. One star.
One star.
One star.
Unlike Walter and Beverly, the people who wrote them do seem to actually exist. My first impulse was to leave my own scathing review. But then I remembered that I am a journalist, and maybe I could do a bit better. I set out on an investigative mission to uncover the true identity of the scammers who duped me. I checked the fine print of Waverly Toronto's terms of service. I checked the source information provided by the shipping service that they used. I checked the Who Is information on their domain registry. I ran reverse image searches on their products. And I scoured the internet for any mention anywhere of the clothing store Waverly Toronto. And I did find something. Something strange. a different online clothing store, Omelia and Oliver of London. At the beginning of their terms and conditions legalese page, I found the sentence, "This website is operated by Waverly Toronto." I went back to check on that a day later, only to discover that the website had changed from Omelia and Oliver of London, UK, to Omelia and Oliver Toronto. Both sites and their layout and messaging struck me as almost identical to Waverly Toronto. So then I went back to check Waverly Toronto's website to see if the source codes matched. Waverly Toronto had disappeared. Was that just a coincidence that Waverly Toronto disappeared right when I started to hunt them down? That they closed up shop right when I discovered that maybe this wasn't just one dodgy website, but that there was some connection between Waverly Toronto and Omelia and Oliver? I mean, what if this was an entire fraud ring? I was determined to uncover all of it, no matter how hard I had to look for more sites in this ring. Turns out I did not have to look very hard at all, because while I was out searching for breadcrumbs, loaves of bread started to fall from the sky and smack me on the head. I did not hunt for and discover, for example, Aveline Couture. Aveline Couture found me. They served me an ad for women's handbags.
In 2004, Aveline Couture began with a dream and two women crafting elegant handbags by hand in the heart of Yorkville, Toronto's premier fashion district. Guided by an...
I started getting these ads every day. Store after store, going out of business in Toronto, in Montreal, in Vancouver. Men's clothes, women's clothes, handbag stores. Stores selling things that I am obviously not the target demographic for. Why? Why was I getting these? Here's my best guess. Behavior tracking and data sharing. When I went deliberately onto the sites of these stores, when I was investigating these dodgy clothing stores, the algorithm looked at my behavior and figured, this guy must like these kind of stores. And the fact that I had actually made a purchase on one of them, well, that must have put me at the top of the suckers list. And either separate dodgy companies were sharing that suckers list, or maybe it was just one company, one entity somewhere, endlessly generating fake-ass stores.
After two decades of passion and dedication, we've reached a bittersweet decision. Adelaide Toronto will be closing...
28 years ago, two best friends took a leap into the unknown. With all our savings and full of dreams, we opened...
A boutique founded by Sophie, Trunova Canada features timeless and comfortable...
It's time for us to begin a new chapter as grandmothers.
Competing against the corporate giants has become an uphill battle. And while we fought with everything we had, the time has come...
Trunova Canada is more than just a brand. It's a community.
With love and gratitude, Emma and Claire.
This isn't the end. It's just the beginning of something new. With lots of love, always, your Nicole and Jessica.
My feed was totally taken over with stylish independent Canadian boutiques going out of business after serving their local communities for decades. Stores like Manesco, Avalay, Jacob & Nayla, Montreal Mode, Manitoba Mode, Walker and Moreau. Each store told a similar story. Each of them had a detailed narrative with fictional characters who had hopes and dreams, dreams for me to be stylish. And each of these sites was customized to different cities in Canada. Sometimes they were customized to specific neighborhoods or communities in Canada. These sites are really manipulative. They prey upon people's concern for their neighborhoods and communities. They try to get you to connect with actual human beings who are being forced to close their businesses. They're appealing to your sense of community. They're showing you images of your own surroundings and asking you to care about what happens to the businesses that have invested in your community. And all of it is a lie. It's all fake. I mean, how could it even be legal to manipulate people's emotions this way? I decided it was time to ask a lawyer.
Are those sleeves the same length, or are they different? Are they different lengths? It's a little tight in the chest, as they say.
That's Neil Hartung.
My name is Neil Hartung. I am a lawyer in the province of Ontario.
Neil practices consumer protection law, and he also does volunteer legal work in consumer advocacy.
I'm with the Consumers Council of Canada, and they're a not-for-profit that advocates for consumers in the consumer protection space.
Neil, is it legal for stores to just lie to people?
So the Consumer Protection Act has a Part 3 in it, which is about not lying to people in the marketplace, right? And basically it says there's a general sort of you can't lie to people, in diplomatic terms, misrepresentations. And then there's a long list of sort of examples of what constitutes lying. And one of those examples is that the goods are available for a reason that doesn't exist. If they're saying that, you know, they're going out of business when they're not, right, that may well be considered a misrepresentation. If you've suffered a misrepresentation, you can rescind the agreement and you can sue on the agreement. The candle is worth more than the cost. I mean, court fees and getting some paper together, you know, that's probably $150. So it's not really a viable option. It's, you know, it's really just a bit of a fool's errand, right? And so the...
Maybe it is a fool's errand. And maybe that's just the kind of errand I like. So if I get emotionally invested in those stories... There is no recourse for, like, emotional damages or anything. Like, we're just talking about the cost associated. Like, there's no kind of, like, ancillary mechanisms for, like, I believed in what you were telling me and it was all a lie.
The pain and suffering, the woe is me.
Yeah.
Canadian courts are very, very stingy about those kinds of damages. Generally, Canadian courts would require that you were so upset by finding out that this was a lie that somehow... you know, that impacted you and you had to spend money to, you know, go to therapy or, you know, you couldn't go to work because you were so despondent about this. That also starts to look a bit like gilding the damages lily. It doesn't really matter all that much in the eyes of the law. And you know, you can think about how businesses name themselves, right? First choice haircutters. Well, everyone loves Marineland, really? Everyone loves whales in captivity? So businesses have a lot of license in the eyes of the law to make up stories, to make up backgrounds. Unless it's kind of relevant to the transaction, it's just sort of part of the noise. It's not the legal signal, right? Contract law, right, which is what we're talking about here, does have a concept in it of a tout. Right? Of being, you know, of telling a story, whether that story is real or not, it doesn't really matter all that much in the eyes of the law.
Could Neil be right? Was the story of Walter and Beverly just like harmless ad speak? The kind that you hear everywhere? You know, like product of Canada when it's not really made in Canada. Or those Axe body spray commercials. Like, nobody actually believes that groups of women will physically throw themselves on you if you smell like Axe. It's just a playful fantasy that both the seller and the buyer enjoy participating in.
I think that someone has come up with a sales script, right? That, you know, we've been around forever, coming up on 30 years. The world has changed and we have to get out. And we need to sort of get rid of our inventory and we're passing those savings on to you, right? That's classic marketplace behavior, right? It is a negotiation. That is the marketplace.
Maybe I hadn't been conned after all. Or if I had been, maybe I had just conned myself. After all, Waverly Toronto never literally claimed that they had a storefront on Bloor Street's Mink Mile. My brain filled in that blank based on their photos. And though my elegant men's cardigan turned out to be 100% polyester, does not feel very elegant at all, Waverly actually never promised me that it was made of anything else. It did not say on the product listing that it was 100% cashmere or anything nice like that. I guess I could still argue that I was lied to about the sizing of my sweater. I was promised an extra large and got a medium, at best. But I don't know, like maybe what I received was a Chinese extra large. And Waverly never claimed that their clothes were not manufactured in China. Maybe all of this was just business as usual. And I was just a guy who bought the wrong sweater. I felt deflated and ready to close the book on this investigation. Take the L, bin the sweater, probably never tell you about any of this. But then something strange happened. All of those Facebook ads for dodgy stores stopped. And instead, I started to get served other Facebook ads and YouTube videos encouraging me to create my own dodgy store.
Tired of the 9-to-5 grind? Let AI work for you.
This kid made $500,000 in high school. Here's how you can copy him. I've been using the same method for the past couple months, and I've already made over $50,000.
We're diving into 5 passive income stream ideas for 2025 that you can't afford to miss.
5 fastest ways to make passive income at any age.
Here are the 4 best passive income ideas to make $10,000 a month, and the last one's my favorite.
I can't be sure how this happened. My best guess is that once it became clear to the algorithms that I was a one-time mark, the algorithms changed their mind about why I kept on clicking onto these shady e-commerce sites. Maybe I no longer fit the customer profile. My behavior may have mirrored the behavior of somebody looking to get into the business, or perhaps somebody who could be convinced to get into the business. And what business is that? The dropshipping business. I'd heard the term before, but I'd never really bothered to find out much about what it meant.
I made $25,000 last month selling a cheap product like this, and you can do the same.
Here's a side hustle for the broke teenagers. You make $500 per day passively with just a phone and a laptop.
I'm not joking when I say this is the lowest risk, highest reward method to start a $10,000 a week dropshipping store.
If you're going to listen to any dropshipping advice, let it be this.
Here's a full tutorial on how I make $1,000 a week in less than 60 seconds.
Holy, I just made $800 in revenue on day one of running ads.
Here's a super simple side hustle that literally anyone could do. I'm not even kidding, even your 75-year-old grandma could do this, or your 10-year-old brother.
As I soon learned, dropshipping is when you sell things you don't actually have in your store that doesn't actually exist. Waverly, Toronto, Aveline Couture, all of them, dropshipping sites. So here's how it works. When you click the buy button on a dropshipper's website, the product is actually ordered from the source supplier. The dropshipper holds no inventory. The dropshipper keeps nothing in stock. The dropshipper doesn't do any shipping. To be a dropshipper, all you need to do is pluck a handful of product listings from somebody else, from a supplier's massive catalog, and feature them on your own store, your own virtual store, at a substantial, perhaps exponential markup.
Let's say I'm in the pets niche. Let's say I want to import this dog bed, right? And I found this one. I really like it. I'm going to go ahead and sell it in my store. So all I need to do to import this product to my store is simply just go ahead and take the link, cut it. And over here, I'm going to go ahead and click on add products. You're going to see that the supplier changes over to whatever the supplier was that you're going with. In this case, AliExpress. And it's shipping from China. We even have the option to generate a product page using AI. Increase the profit to 80%, then $37.46 for the total profit, selling at $102.33.
All of this raises the question, why? Why would anyone buy that dog bed for an 80% markup from a dropshipper when you could buy it for the same price that the dropshipper paid from the source site? And sometimes these are sites like Alibaba or Amazon, sites that we all shop on. Lucky for me, I was now getting ads and videos every day from guys like the ones you just heard, claiming that they had answers to those questions. It seemed like every dropshipping store that was trying to sell me somebody else's products was now replaced with a dropshipping guru trying to sell me tips and tricks for leveling up my own dropshipping game.
I've made millions of dollars with dropshipping.
I've been able to make hundreds of thousands of dollars with AI.
$500 a day exactly working from home.
Hundreds
or
of dollars a day from this side hustle.
$600,000 this month alone.
Now, why these guys are spending a lot of money on ads just to give away their million-dollar dropshipping tips instead of just using those tips themselves and quietly making millions, that might be a question to answer on another day. But for now, I will just distill for you what those gurus taught me in those ads that I was served. What they taught me is how you can take a cheap product on a big e-commerce platform, a site like Alibaba's AliExpress or Shein.com or the Latvian e-commerce platform Joom, or even something I find on Amazon. How can I, or any dropshipper, take that product and convince them to buy it for 300 to 400% more than they need to pay if they just bought it from one of those original sites? The answer to that question, the gurus told me, is marketing. Marketing is what dropshippers add to the value chain. They don't add value by getting things closer to you or putting them in a nearby store where you can go have a look and try before you buy. They do not add value through salesmanship, through providing a great in-store experience, bringing you things to your fitting room that might look great on you, you know, just brightening your day with a friendly, maybe even a flirty interaction. No, dropshippers add value by marketing, by telling you a story about themselves, the friendly neighborhood boutique shutting its doors forever, but also a story about the product. Take, for example, my sweater. If I had first come across that sweater on the first website where you could buy it, a website like AliExpress, well, I would have seen a thumbnail for a cheaply made sweater for $14, and I would not have been interested. But on Waverly Toronto's website, it looked like a luxury item. Not just because the price was higher, not just because it was retitled the Leo Elegant Men's Cardigan, but because my sweater and all of the products on these sites look a lot better on the dropshippers' websites. So how do you take a crappy thumbnail for a crappy product and make it look like a piece of designer luxury wear? Turns out there's an app for that. There are actually many apps for that. And that is exactly what these guys were trying to sell me through Facebook and YouTube. Pay-for-use AI dropshipper marketing apps. There are a bunch of them out there, and the technology is insane. You take your tiny, low-res thumbnail of any product, you upload that crappy photograph to one of these AI marketing tool websites, and it will spit out high-res video after high-res video with gorgeous AI models wearing the product.
This is the cheapest way to actually grow your business. Look up other videos or ads that are using the same product and create a similar video. Now, not just one though. Make 10, 20, 30, or even more. Just become a content factory.
I'm serious. I could take a crappy iPhone photograph of your coffee mug and put it in like a Gucci level ad for that coffee mug. You can even generate AI testimonials. Fake customers telling the world that they bought your product and they love it.
Have you heard of this new AI tool?
This AI tool allows you to get anybody to hold your product for you. You can select from the hundreds of people that they give you, upload your product image, and there you have it, somebody holding your product. Comment the word AI if you want this tool.
These tools can produce slick-looking ads, as I mentioned, with AI models flouting the product, but they can also churn out convincing testimonials from supposedly regular people who bought your products and love them. It's the next generation of fake written product reviews, which have been plaguing e-commerce for years now. Once again, here is consumer rights lawyer Neil Hartung.
But those reviews are a whole other aspect of the scam, right? You can buy Google reviews, you can buy Facebook reviews. They're called review brokers, right? And it's all part of the tout. What we're talking about is the ability of AI to just create a quantum leap in that kind of marketing, right? And I don't want to say it's fraudulent marketing, but there's definitely a gap. And that used to be a concern, right? Like, I still, if I'm buying something that I care about, I want to see the thing. I don't want to buy it just based on a picture, right? Otherwise, you end up with something that doesn't quite fit right or whatever. But more and more people aren't going that route, right? They're relying on, the Google reviews and the 5 stars, and it was excellent, and throw some testimonials in there, and maybe you'll get what you bargained for, and maybe you won't, right? The AI tools that we're looking at just enforce that. It's how quickly you can create a relatively decent looking ad for almost zero effort and zero money.
But I think it may actually have gone beyond that. All right, let's recap our story so far. I bought a sweater from a robot who hurt my feelings. The robot knew what kind of things I was all greedy and sweaty for, and it knew that I would pay like four times as much for something if I thought I was buying it from a waspy silver fox couple in a fancy store down the street. I went looking for that robot and for its master, and instead I found a robot army. Or more accurately, I didn't find anything because the robot wasn't hiding. The robot was doing all of this out in the open as part of a semi-legitimate racket called dropshipping, which led me to the semi-legitimate racket of dropshipping influencers who taught me that I could become a master of robots myself. And yet I was no closer to discovering the identity of whoever it was who had fooled me. The person who made up Walter and Beverly and Waverly Toronto and their sad luck story. And I never did find that person. Because I'm pretty sure that just like Walter and Beverly, that person does not exist. I started piecing it together when the carefully crafted consumer experiences of Waverly Toronto and its endless doppelganger websites began to glitch. For example, the website of Great Lake Fashion, well, it told me that it was governed by the laws of the Netherlands. The ostensibly elegant Canadian clother True Nova, they had been sending me ads for products for elegant older ladies, raincoats and handbags. And then all of a sudden it spat out the most lurid pornographic lingerie I had seen. Straps of overlapping tight vinyl and see-through mesh and the crotch covered by like a ribbon of leather no wider than a shoelace. Seemed pretty off-brand. Then a local Toronto boutique suddenly bragged to me that it had been loyally serving its customers in Malibu, Australia for 20 wonderful years. It felt like these stores, across their websites, Facebook, YouTube, across platforms, it felt like they were on autopilot, on robot autopilot, and that pilot was hallucinating. I started wondering if my earlier premise was wrong. Nobody had meticulously crafted Walter and Beverly in order to prey upon my greed for deeply discounted Mink Mile luxury goods. Maybe nobody fabricated Walter and Beverly. Maybe somebody built a robot to do that.
What AI enables is the scale and scope, right? What would take, you know, let's say, you know, we were in 2010, you know, it would take work by people to create each one of those websites, host it, create the content to go with it. And AI has just allowed that to move so much more quickly, right? I think what you're, I'm also...
Last week, as we were getting ready to bring you this piece, CBC Manitoba broke a weird and sad story about a website called Manitoba Mode.
It's called Manitoba Mode. On the landing page, there's a photo of a building on fire and text saying, "This is the final goodbye." The company claims its warehouse in Flin Flon was destroyed by wildfires and that only a few pieces are left, which it's selling at deep discounts. There's even a countdown clock to imply urgency, which we found resets after it hits zero.
It was reported by Joanne Levasseur and Caroline Bargout, and many of the details sounded familiar to me. The owner of Manitoba Mode is a woman named Claire, a single mom living in the small city of Flin Flon, and she was closing shop after 15 great years. Now, everything must go. It was a fire sale. That sounds identical to all the other pitches, but this time it was a literal fire sale. Manitoba Mode claimed that its warehouse in Flin Flon, Manitoba, had burned down, and Claire now had to sell what little inventory she had left. There was a photo of Claire smiling in her shop, accompanying the testimonial. The AI did glitch a bit when rendering the logo behind her. It read, "Manitoba Mode." Yep. This was another fake. As CBC reported, there is no Manitoba mode. There is no warehouse in Flin Flon that burned down. And there is no Claire. But over in real life, there are now over 20 active wildfires raging in Manitoba, and the largest is in Flin Flon.
Let's jump back to Manitoba, which was really our focal point yesterday, the first province to declare a province-wide state of emergency. We know there are more than 20 fires burning across the province. Many of them are out of control. And that includes the fire that has forced the evacuation of all of Flin Flon, Manitoba.
The entire city has been evacuated. Real people are losing everything. Flin Flon's mayor, George Fontaine, took time away from the emergency to comment on the fraudulent website to the CBC.
No, it's disgusting. It's a terrible thing. There's enough bad things going on in Flin Flon right now that nature has provided for us. We don't need this kind of behavior from people around.
We do not need that kind of behavior from people. But I can't help wondering if maybe Mayor George might have been shaming a robot, not a person. There is a person somewhere, someone who is responsible for setting all of this into motion. There is a person somewhere who is receiving all the money for this. But good luck finding them, says Neil Hartung of the Consumer Council of Canada. And even if you do find them, good luck bringing them to justice.
It's about resources at the end of the day, Jesse. You know, how many resources are you putting into protecting consumers, right? And in Ontario, the police budget in Toronto, for example, is, what, $1 billion? In Ontario, the whole consumer protection function is about $20 million, $22 million. You know, you do quick back of the envelope math on that, that's about $1.20 per resident of Ontario at a population of 15 million, right? So they largely run a call center that provides people with advice, but there's something like, I don't know, 3 part-time prosecutors and 8 to 10 inspectors for the entire province. Definitely, in my experience over 20-something years in this area, the amount of chicanery in the marketplace seems like it was more than it was in the past. Analog scams are slow, and you got to work them out, and it's a ground game. I think that there's very, very little protection against this sort of thing in the law, and that's, you know, it's there notionally, but that's about it. And there's lots of laws that would say, like, all of those are lies, right? And and mistruths. And the Competition Act would have stuff to say about that, but so what, right? Like, it's a $80, $100 purchase. There really is no remedy. There's no cop on the beat with a $20 million budget. And it's a kind of, you know, buyer beware.
You heard what the lawyer said. Buyer beware.
The sleeve length is what I'm still mouth a gap on.
That is your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me about anything you heard today at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Lots of audio production today and editing from Caleb Thompson. Today's episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Thanks today for the voice talents of Tristan Capicione, Noor Azria, and Caleb Thompson. Max Collins is our director of audio. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll talk about these goddamn ostriches and why they really do need to die, despite what this American billionaire has to say about it.
We're worried that it's a pharmaceutical company influencing the Canadian government to destroy these birds.
Wait for that. Jen Wong, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. There are close to 400 ostriches on this farm where supporters from across the country are watching and worrying about the birds' future.
These are God's creatures.
We can't let them do this. Please come surround the farm. Don't let them do this to these beautiful animals.
The humane depopulation of the birds after 69 of them died of avian flu.
You see RVs, tents, people have set up camps.
But the farm says they haven't had a sick bird in more than 145 days.
Defying logic, defying science, defying humanity.
Dr. Oz, between you and Secretary Kennedy, you guys did a great job. We hope we have saved the lives of the ostriches in British Columbia.
You know, Jen, sometimes the Clip Pack tells a story, but some stories defy. Like, that just sounded like a random sound generator. Like, what the hell is this about? It is not an easy one. It is an absurd story. And I just want to put one caveat. The first one of us, between you and I, to make a stick your head in the sand or, like, this is for the birds pun, will be culled.
Oh, God.
That host will be destroyed. Okay.
Okay.
So, this is international news. And I'm learning so much as I try to get my head around this. Millions of birds have been destroyed since the avian flu outbreak and the global concern about this. Like, millions.
Yeah, because avian flu is very dangerous.
We understand how it spreads. We can't let it out. So if, like, one chicken in a chicken farm tests positive for avian flu, they cull all of them.
Yeah.
And they compensate the farmer.
That's good to know.
Here's a digression before I even get into the ostriches. In researching this story, I came across my favorite piece of Canadian regulation here. This is on the justice.gc.ca website. Compensation for destroyed animals and things regulations. This is CDATR. I was so intrigued by the things. Compensation for destroyed animals and things regulations. And here we find out what every animal you could imagine is worth to the government. If the government demands that you destroy a registered dog, they give you $2,500.
Wow.
A cat's only worth
$500. that hurts cat people. Okay.
I'm going to put this link up in the show notes.
How much is a chicken worth?
Chickens, like, it depends, because there's, like, the grandfather breeding. It's, like, something like 25 to 50 or 60, something like that.
Okay.
Guess what the most expensive animal is to the Canadian government?
A mink?
Nope. Cows and bisons, which makes me think there's some lobbying involved, because cows are worth more than horses, $8,000. Honeybees, $250 per colony is what you get paid back if you have to kill your bees. Hippos?
Who has a hippo?
I don't know.
Do you have one?
I don't have a hippo, but if I did and I had to kill it for the government, I get $5,000. But check this out. If I had to kill my pygmy hippo, I get $8,000. Less hippo, bigger payout.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So that brings us to this story where I feel it's not properly reported. First of all,
yes,
the fact that you get all this money, because really this is about money, and it's being reported as if it's animal rights and crazy Dr. Oz, crazy RFK Jr. You know, it's missing this story because this people are now ringing the ostrich farm, right, trying to save the ostriches. But I would just like to point out that when you have an ostrich farm, it's because you intend to kill every single ostrich on your farm and sell them for meat and whatever else, sometimes their skin. I mean, you're not growing them because you want to hang out with ostriches and you love them.
It can be both.
Yeah, you want to kill them. You want the meat. And if you look at the website, which has been disabled, but then I kept poking around, and I found a related company. What's the related? It's called Omega Ostrich. It's related to the farm. They're the ones that sell the meat online, and they show these packages, vacuum packaged, different parts of the ostrich.
Yes, ostriches are sold for meat and eggs. And, Jen, as you said, their skin, leather, ostrich leather. Who knew? I'm learning things.
Oh, yeah, it's nice. Lots of wallets made of ostrich leather.
I'm curious about fine ostrich leather now. You say it's about the money. I think it's about my freedoms. Okay, listen, a lot of people know this one. If you don't, here are the basics. Universal Ostrich Farms Incorporated, which is an ostrich farm in Edgewood, BC. They've been raising ostriches since the 1990s. Like any other ostrich farm, Universal Ostrich Farms raised ostriches for meat But they claim that since COVID, they are raising scientific ostriches. They say that they've pivoted from meat to science, though I will note that the Canadian Food Inspection Agency cannot confirm this and has said Universal Ostrich Farm has not substantiated their claims of scientific research. CFIA has not received any evidence of scientific research being done at the infected premises. It's not clear if they are still selling ostrich meat through Omega Ostriches or not. What we do know is that in 2024, some of the birds at Universal Ostrich Farms tested positive for avian flu. 69 of their 468 ostriches died. And in December, the government said, you got to kill your ostriches and we will compensate you. You'll get $3,000 per ostrich, but you got to kill them.
What?
$3,000. Pretty good, right?
$3,000? Are you sure of that?
I am sure.
Because that's more than the ostrich is worth.
I haven't done research on what the ostrich is worth.
I looked at the prices. How much is it? Let's see.
What are you looking at, like a pack of meat? The whole ostrich might be worth $3,000. I don't know.
No, it's not that much meat. I think it's $25 a pound for the meat.
And how many pounds is an ostrich?
Oh, sorry. I didn't do enough research.
Now let's talk about the leather. And what price could you place on the emotional attachment?
Yeah, you're just so happy, hey? This is John. Look at everybody. All so happy, happy, happy birds. Happy birds. Everybody's just coming in out from a drink.
And I think you get extra for disposal of the corpse. That's what the end thing is in the regulations.
So this is an absurd story.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going to get enough money.
Yeah.
And avian flu is a real thing, but there's more to it than that. They're claiming their herd of ostriches are over avian flu, but like COVID, you can get reinfected and you might not have symptoms. So we don't know and we don't care. You know why? Because international trade protocols require that Canada adhere to this behavior. If you have it, you got to cull the whole herd. Otherwise, other countries are not going to buy our other ostriches or our other chickens or whatever else we're selling. They're not going to buy it. So it affects all the producers in Canada.
And otherwise, there might be a global avian flu pandemic.
That too.
You're just believing what the man wants you to believe there, Jan. So here's how this got out of hand. The farmers have become a cause célèbre. And not only do they say, look, we understand the science. Our ostriches, like the remaining ostriches, did not get avian flu. They have herd immunity. And not only do they have herd immunity, but you can't cull them because in their herd immunity, they hold the secrets to immunity for all.
We believe significant scientific knowledge may be garnered from following the ostriches in a controlled environment at Universal Ostrich Farm.
I don't know if you watched the show Last of Us, Jan, but it's all about the mushroom fungus zombie.
No, I didn't. No.
Okay, so there's a girl who's immune to the fungus that turns you into a zombie, and in her body is like that. Maybe there's a cure.
Our doctor, he thinks that the cordyceps in Ellie has grown with her since birth.
Why is she in surgery?
It produces a kind of chemical messenger. It makes normal cordyceps think that she's cordyceps. It's why she's immune. He's going to remove it from her, multiply the cells in a lab, produce those chemical messengers. And then we can give it to everyone. He thinks it could be a cure, Joel.
So the ostriches are like the girl.
No. The scientists, the generally respected scientists, say this is a lot of crap. And yes, they found a few scientists who are anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
Who say, yes, let's save these ostriches. So, you know, it's like the whole COVID thing in Looney Tunes, right? Nobody's doing this about chickens.
Well, that's just the thing, is that millions in the U.S. and Canada, like, we've been culling a whole lot of poultry, and this has a lot to do with the public outrage and the fact that this has become an international story has a lot to do with the cuteness of ostriches. And
yeah,
there is a bit of like a media history to this, Jan. So there's a whole thing about deer on Vancouver Island, and they're like a photo of a deer getting trapped in a fence.
A deer struggling to free itself from fencing installed by Parks Canada on Sydney Island.
What became like a big bleeding heart cause. And then, you know, you remember like the seal hunt, and
yeah,
you know, there's like a traditional way of life, but you got Paul McCartney.
So we are concerned
concerned about economics for the people. We think there's other ways to do it than to continue this brutal practice.
Brigitte Bardot and the Pamela Anderson.
Bardot's now passing on the torch to today's bustiest sex symbol.
I've never met Brigitte Bardot, but we both just have such a great love of animals.
Together, the pair are urging the Canadian ambassador in France to stop seal hunting around the Arctic.
If the animals are cute, then people get all excited.
Yeah, and often it's this weird thing. It's come from this kind of like conservationist left celebrity pet cause. There, I hit a pun. Sorry, I must be killed. And often it's like you've got communities of people who actually live in the land or live off land being like, F off. Like, we really don't need Paul McCartney telling us that we can't hunt seal. But it happened like Montreal Coyote Hotline in 2018. That was like picked up by the BBC. Raccoon stories about Toronto have made it to The Guardian. Like, the worldwide press is a lot more interested in Canada's animals than in Canadians.
Well, they think we're wild country, right? They think that we don't have paved roads and we live in structures made out of blocks of ice.
Yes.
They stereotype us.
And it's easier for them, I think, to kind of like get on some kind of save the whales thing with our animals. Like, they don't care about our politics or our communities necessarily. But that's where the media trope ends, because it's always been from kind of the animal conservationist left in the past. And now it's coming from, as you say, it's like the exact same people who are involved in the anti-vax thing. Because now it's about government is coming onto the lands of good. It's an overreach. They want to come onto our land and they want to kill our beloved healthy animals.
Please, it's an SOS. 301 Langell Road. Let's protect these animals and protect our food security, protect our rights, protect truth, protect science, and let's protect all our families around Canada. This is overreach at its biggest, and they're being bullies, and we're going to have to bully back. So,
and that is making this a cause that has hit RFK.
These animals live to 50 years old. We should not be killing them. We should be studying them.
And Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz.
You know, we'll study these birds if you give them to us.
And it's all being fueled by Rebel News.
Drea Humphrey here with Rebel News, bringing you a report just before I'm leaving the Universal Ostrich Farms.
After the break, we'll answer the question, what do uninformed idiots and people who don't even live here have to say about all this? Yes, we'll hear from anti-lockdown protesters and Dr. Oz. Here's a clip where this guy, Harm Baum, a recognizable face from past protests during COVID-19, who is once again standing up for citizen rights and government accountability.
Well, there's many issues at stake here right now, but I think one of the biggest things to me is the PCR test, especially in light of the Canada signing on with the pandemic treaty. That's a terrible thing right there. That and, like, this makes a pretext for injecting all livestock in Canada with mRNA vaccines. But, yeah, this sets a bad precedent for government overreach and trying to shut down small farms and getting their fingers into everything, right? We got to protect our farms, save our farmers, protect our food supply and our livestock. It all needs to be saved, right? And also shed light on the PCR test.
This is a pretense for getting mRNA. I think that there's a conspiracy theory baked into that, that like if they can't convince you to take the shot, then they'll feed you ostrich meat that contains the mRNA. And
have you ever had ostrich?
I think I've had ostrich meat before.
It's kind of dry.
Yeah, I think that it's like supposed to be like a superfood, but then I'm like, this isn't very tasty. And
yeah, it's not great. Very dry, low fat, too lean.
Yeah. Maybe if it's cooked properly. I don't know. I don't need to eat ostrich. This has been picked up by The Guardian and The New York Times. And, like, it's this incursion of things that I just don't like seeing in Canadian news. Like, RFK in partnership with this weird billion. Like, why do we care about what an American billionaire thinks? So this guy, John A. Catsimatidis, he is a American billionaire, businessman, and radio talk show host. And he's the president, chairman, and CEO of grocery chains, including D'Agostino in Manhattan, fancy supermarket. And now he's weighing in on this. So here he is in conversation with Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz, between you and Secretary Kennedy, you guys did a great job. We hope we have saved the lives of the ostriches in British Columbia.
And again, for everyone listening, the reason this matters is not just about ostriches in British Columbia. It's about the fact that science should dictate the advances that we make, and if you're not going to follow the science, don't pretend you are. So if you have, in the case of ostriches, a flock of a couple hundred birds that got infected years ago, got better from this virus H5N1, then they got infected again last year, and they again got better, well, there's things to learn. What is it that helped these birds weather avian flu and other illnesses. And if you just kill the birds because you're worried and scared, you know, that's analogous to some of the mistakes we made during COVID, where we have these reactionary responses that were not based in science, but based on bureaucracy. It undermines the confidence people have in science. And again, if you're listening at home right now, these birds live up to 50 years, right?
And the antibodies these birds have might be valuable to science.
Plus, what is it that allowed them to survive this infection? Most of these birds did just fine. What genes do they have? What kinds of response do they generate? This could be life-saving to the humans. That stated, if the first response is, oh my gosh, there's terrible things could be going down in the future, we got to kill them all. Well, that's not very wise as a response. It doesn't sound very smart, and it turns out that doesn't tend to be scientifically based.
We're worried that it's a pharmaceutical company influencing the Canadian government to destroy these birds.
I don't know why they'd want to destroy the birds, but I do believe there's a broader reactionary approach to dealing with infections from COVID.
The boys have the antibodies. The boys, don't kill the boys because you're scared. What are you scared of? You need the boy. It's got It's got magic in the middle of the boy. What the hell are we listening to?
I know.
If not for the fact that these people are incredibly powerful, why would you even want to boost that signal? The world we live in now.
People listen. Well, anyway, we have the government regulations. It's still Canada. We're not the 51st state. So I don't know why the government isn't moving in to cull. I don't understand what the delay is.
Because they're setting this up like Waco. Like there's going to be like a standoff. Like, over my dead body, are you going to stand onto my sovereign territory? And it's become like a mecca for nut jobs who are like, Jen, there's a quarantine order on this farm and they're hosting their like fellow travelers.
Oh.
Like people are bringing their kids to this farm. No one's supposed to go to this farm. There's avian, like.
I actually Google mapped it and it's midway between Vancouver and Calgary, which means it's right in the Rockies. So it's really not easy to get to. That's the only saving grace.
No. But if you go there with your kid, like what if somebody contracts?
I know. It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
These rules are there and it's not big pharma. It's not a plot. These rules are there because we've had avian flu in many countries and the fatality rate for humans is very high. And that's why.
We really don't want avian flu. We really don't want it.
No, we don't. COVID is bad enough. SARS was bad enough. It's too much, right?
It feels like the virus that is spreading is just this insanity, this anti-rational, yeah. And it just feels like nothing is safe from it. To the extent that you might imagine that Canada is quarantined from the RFKs of the world and the Dr. Oz's of like an all, like we're not. Like they can pull us into their orbit. All they have to do is kind of recognize our existence and the headlines are generated.
And then we get dragged in.
Yeah. I'm proud of you. Not one bird pun. That's our show for today. Thank you for joining me. You can email me about it at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. Jen, I'm going to give you the option. Where can people find you or which book of yours should they go by?
You can find me at janwong.ca. Buy all the books.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson. Our associate producer is Lucy Lemonnier, who also did the fact check on this episode. Mixing and mastering by Tristan Capicchione. Our director of audio is Max Collins. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall. I say, Carruthers, are you all right down there?
Rock, hip-hop, folk, punk, and electro-pop. New. Canadian, and even local, Indie Wake Up handles your morning. Here for you, Kingston. Weekday mornings from 8 to 10. On the one, the only, CFRC 101.9 FM.
What's going on? What are you doing? Tanya Dohaskigo, then on Zewa Dahusadaje, Ungahuwen, Hadiwanodos, Nene Aboriginal Voices, Oscar Dewa Nyawar Oscar, Ne.